We are in a series, What If It's True? Does God Exist? 39 people, you remember about it, 39 people called Heaven's Gate made a suicide pact following their leader who had a mental health background, some problems, and they had this idea that they were going to link up with the UFOs in the tail of a comet. And when the U.S. News and World Report did a cover story on that, here's the question they asked. How can reasonable people believe unreasonable things? And that question goes to the heart of this series. How can reasonable people believe unreasonable things? It's amazing to me. People want to believe everything but the truth. I mean, they'll believe some of those wild stuff, some of those unbelievable stuff, and yet the simple truth, they seem to want to back away. I promise that I'll ask some questions that you need to face. I hope that I'll give some answers that you want to hear. Honestly, fairly, compassionately, I want to convey a message for every one of us to know beyond any shadow of a doubt that there is a God and He is in control. And we'll talk about that. And I want to talk about it rationally. Because, you know, I believe it makes a whole lot more sense to believe there is a God than to believe there is not a God. I think it takes a lot more faith to be an atheist or an agnostic or a humanist than it does to be a Christian. So how much evidence do you need to believe in God? If you come to hear this message and you want to know, does God exist, and you want me to prove that to you, then I want to know, how much evidence is it going to take to convince you? Because if you want me to convince you beyond any shadow of a doubt that God exists, I can't. On the other hand, if you want me to convince you beyond a reasonable doubt that God exists, I can. Because you see, very few things can be known with absolute certainty. We don't live that way. You're not absolutely certain that you're going to be around tomorrow. You're not absolutely certain you're going to have a job next week. You're not absolutely certain that when you eat lunch today that your wife hasn't laced it with cyanide. You're not absolutely certain about most things. So we live on the basis of what is more realistic, what is the probability. So what we're dealing with, is there enough evidence to tip the scales of probability toward the fact that God does indeed exist? And personally, I think it does. So I have two goals. Goal number one is to strengthen Christians in their faith. It's to arm you with the truth of God so that you know what you believe and why you believe it. See, you're to make Christ Lord in your heart, but you're also to make Him Lord in your head. When Jesus took away your sins, He didn't take away your brains. You see, we're to think as Christians. Here's what the Bible says, 1 Peter 3:15, but in your hearts, set apart Christ as Lord. Always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope that you have. But do this with gentleness and respect. God says, be prepared, Christians. Always be prepared to give answers, to give reasons for your faith, and solid reasons, good answers, something that makes sense. And to do it not with an attitude, but to do it with a gentle spirit, and to do it with respect. Respect people who don't believe exactly like you believe. Respect the questions of others. So I want to strengthen Christians, but the second thing, I want to stir non-Christians. I want to stir non-Christians into looking into the evidence with an open mind. That's all I'm asking you to do, is to look at the evidence with an open mind and then follow the evidence wherever it leads. Because the Christian faith is not just some emotional ooey-gooey kind of thing. That you have this emotional experience because you have a quiver in your liver and it's all about emotion. The Christian faith is reasonable. It is logical. It makes sense. I don't know of a single place in this entire book where God tells us that faith is simply a leap in the dark. It's blind faith that leaps in the dark. No, this whole book was written that you can know who God is and what God is about. So if you're a spiritual seeker, I hope you find the evidence you're looking for. I hope you know that before this day is over in your heart that God does indeed exist. But let me be honest with you. If you ask the question, does God exist, then you have to be prepared for the answer, whatever that answer may be. And then once you know that answer, then you have some kind of responsibility to respond. So what I want to do is I want to just simply, quickly deal with the five classic arguments for the existence of God. And these first couple of words, just hearing the words, don't get you excited and just try to stay in your seats. Don't be jumping up and down. When I say, first of all, I'm talking about the cosmological argument. That word itself blesses you. Cosmos means world, and logos means a reason or explanation. There's a reason for the existence of this world. How do you explain the existence of creation apart from God? Here's what Romans 1:20 says. For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, His eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that men are without excuse. We can clearly see God, so that nobody has a good excuse. God's fingerprints are everywhere. God creates something out of nothing, and He's the only one that can do that. Something exists. Where did it come from? You see, nothingness needs no explanation. But when something exists, we want to know, where did it come from? If while I'm preaching, a brick is headed toward my head, a couple of things will happen. One is, if I'm quick enough, I'll duck, and it'll miss my head. The second thing is, I want to know where it came from. Was it from a deacon? A staff member? A terrorist? Where did it come from? I want to know that. Now, if you tell me it's just always been out there, I mean, the brick's always been flying in space, it just happened to show up here on this occasion, then I'm going to have trouble buying that. It's just like dominoes, you know, they're all lined up and then they start falling. The question is, who struck that first domino? It started the fall. Oh, you say, they were always falling. Now, when you have something that's happened, when you see something that exists, then the question, how did it happen? Who did it? Who started it? There are basically just three answers why the world exists. The first is, the universe has always existed. It's always been here. To be honest, there's very little evidence to support this. I'm not sure many people believe this anymore. It contradicts the second law of thermodynamics, that any physical system becomes less ordered and more random over time. In other words, if it's always existed, it would just be getting worse and worse. Everything breaks down and decays. Everything loses energy. You know that in real life. We decay. We break down. Well, Take your high school graduation picture and compare it with the picture on your driver's license today. You'll understand about that. You know, when beauty fades, gravity takes hold. You think you married Brad Pitts, and you end up with Sam Donaldson. It's a problem, you understand. You think you married Julia Roberts, and you end up with a Janet Reno lookalike. Things happen. We don't stay the same. So, but as you look at the world, if it's just happened and it's always existed, it's just always doing its thing, then this world would be constantly losing energy, so much so that we couldn't inhabit it today. But you see, somebody is in control. Somebody makes sure the sun is not going to burn out until God's through with it, until we don't need it anymore. Yeah, they say the sun's going to last so many thousands of years, which means they'll finish I-20 in the dark. But I'm telling you that God is in charge, in control. And so this whole place isn't caving in, because God is the one in charge. So that's the first. The universe has always existed. The second is the universe created itself. That's how it got here. It just created itself. I'll give you an illustration of how something could happen like that accidentally. The same probability. And that is a tornado goes through a junkyard, and the result is a fully functional F-16 fighter plane. Just happened. Same probability that this world, as technical, as complex, would just happen. And yet there are many people who believe that. Well, it just happened. Just like this Bible happened. You see this Bible and all these pages and the print. That happened as a result of an explosion at the printer. It just kind of fell together. Or you look at the beautiful homes in your neighborhood, you say, how did these homes get to be this? Was there a designer, plans? Did somebody, skillful hands, build it? Oh no, it was a tornado that went through a forest, and this is what happened. That's the kind of crazy thinking that amazingly people have when they talk about it just created itself. That contradicts the first law of thermodynamics that says matter can be converted into energy and energy into matter, but neither can be self-created. It's got to come from somewhere. So, number one, it always existed. Number two, it created itself. Number three, someone created it. You see, when you look at a watch, and if you took the back off of this watch, I don't see how anybody could say that thing just happened. I mean, somebody was sweeping up metal, and look what happened. But it just all jumped together and came out this way. Now, you know, there was a watchmaker. You take the back off of your computer, look at it. Did that just happen? Or did someone create that? Your cell phone. Did it just happen, or did someone create that? Here's what I believe. It takes a lot more faith to believe that it's always existed, or that it just happened by itself, than the fact that there was an intelligent creator, a powerful being who made it happen. And the Bible tells us, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Albert Einstein, the most brilliant physicist ever, said this, I am no longer an atheist. Why? Because he thought through existence. He thought through this process, and he realized, no, it didn't always exist. That breaks the law of thermodynamics. No, it did not create itself. That breaks another law of thermodynamics. Somebody had to create it. So he said, I'm no longer an atheist. Stephen Hawking, who probably is the most brilliant physicist since Einstein, said, it is difficult to explain why the universe should begin in just this way, except as an act of a God who wanted to create beings just like us. To the most brilliant men to ever live, realize that God had a plan, and that God wanted to create beings like you and me, and a place for us to live. Does everybody believe that way? No. There are those who want to keep God out of the equation, period. Harvard scientist George Wahl, who won the 1967 Nobel Prize in Physiology, says this. I want you to listen to this. When it comes to the origin of life on Earth, there are only two possibilities: creation or spontaneous generation. Spontaneous generation was disproved over 100 years ago. But that leads us to only one other conclusion, that of a supernatural creation. But we can't end there. He goes on. We cannot accept that. Therefore, we choose to believe the impossible, that life arose spontaneously by chance. Then I just amaze you. I mean, here is this supposedly sharp man, brilliant man, and he says, well, it's evident that there's a supernatural creation, but we can't accept that. So we're going to believe the impossible, that it just happened. And you want to say the angel of duh is flying over your head. What is your problem? And I could tell you about many other people who say the same thing. The problem is they, from the beginning, exclude God. Whatever they're doing in research, wherever they're trying to head, whatever they're trying to prove, at the outset, they always exclude God because they cannot accept God as the creator of the universe. So, if you want to know how this thing got started, how it was created, this whole wonderful universe that we live in, the most current, the most popular explanation for the universe is what's called the Big Bang Theory. Hubble, the space telescope, Hubble popularized this theory. And this is amazing. Listen, here's how it happened. Just try to... I know that you're going to hold on the edge of your seats when you're going to get so excited about this. But about 15 billion years, matter concentrated in a speck of dust. All matter in the universe was concentrated in a speck of dust. It took 15 billion years for it to happen. A speck of dust so small it could easily go through the eye of a needle. So hot that atoms or atomic particles couldn't exist in it. So dense that the laws of physics could not apply. And then, bang, it expanded. The speck of dust expanded to the size of a football in 1 million, billion, billion, billionth of a second. And then for another 15 billion years, it continued to expand, and with a cooling of gravity and the operation of the laws of physics, here it is. Who are these people? I don't get it. That smart, intelligent people can say, that's how it, I understand that, that makes sense. And millions take the Big Bang Theory for granted. Do you understand? We still don't even know what 90% of the universe is made of. And yet we think the Big Bang happened. Two problems with the Big Bang. Number one is, where did that first speck of dust come from? I mean, it had to come from somewhere. Why did it exist in the first place? Or why was it not somewhere else? Or why did not something else exist instead of that speck of dust? The Big Bang can't answer any of those questions. Second thing wrong with the Big Bang Theory, even planned explosions produce disorder, not order. Let me give you an illustration. 80,000 explosions in Iraq. What was the result? It rebuilt Iraq. No, I don't think it did. I think it's a mess over there. If you watch enough television, it's a mess. Only the information minister would tell you that it's rebuilt. So even planned explosions create disorder, chaos. And yet they're saying we had this big explosion and then we have this beautiful universe as a result of it. Well, somebody has computed the odds. A British mathematician, Roger Penrose, computed the odds of the Big Bang Theory of that happening. And he came up with this number. 10 to the 10th power, and then above that, 123. Now, I'm not into high math, so I didn't have a clue what that meant. So I talked to some people that I thought knew something about math. They don't have a clue. I talked to some other people that I knew pretty smart about math. They said, that number is so high, there's not a name for it. And we're talking about the odds of the Big Bang Theory happening. So here's what he came up with. He said the number is so absurdly large that if you put a digit on every proton in the universe, you still couldn't finish writing the number. Or if the day you were born, you started writing zeros and you wrote zeros every day until you died, you still could not write that number. That's the probability of the Big Bang Theory, and yet we have so-called intelligent people, we have teachers in schools teaching this junk, we have people believing it, millions believing that that's how it all happened because somehow that sounds better than a God creating the world. Is chance really a good enough answer? No. Science speaks against it. Mathematical probability speaks against it. Common sense speaks against it. So we have the cosmological argument. Then we have the teleological argument. This word you like even better. Here we're talking about design. We're talking about order. We're talking about intricacies, the awesome design and complex intricacies of this universe that we live in. Everywhere you look in the world, you see design and order and complexity. From photosynthesis in plants, the complex migrating patterns in birds. Birds just fascinate me. They go the same place every year. We just had the hummingbird show back up in our yard, and you know those. They're so tiny. You can imagine. Can't even imagine they fly. And yet, how they cross the ocean. I don't. But there's a pattern of birds migrating, and then there's the mating, breathing system of fish and sea creatures. I mean, how long do you stay underwater? How well do you breathe underwater? How many times have you seen a fish struggling to breathe underwater unless somebody was messing with it?
Something had to set that up. The spawning salmon. We were up in, I don't know where we were, wherever the salmon are, and watching them not only just swim upstream, jump upstream, and hear how they go back to the same spot every time, against all odds, going up the stream, jumping up, and then go up there, and after they spawn, they die. All set up by someone. From DNA all the way to the galaxies, you see incredible design and complexity and order. DNA is the popular thing now because we're fascinated with it because we've heard so much stuff on television. It's so much information, all the data to design a human being, the hair, the skin, the eyes, the height, and then the arrangement of the 200 bones and 600 muscles and 10,000 auditory nerves and 2 million optic nerves and 100 billion brain cells, 400 billion blood vessels. And DNA packs all of that in a tiny unit weighing a few thousand millionth of a gram. Now that's small. Real small. And here's what somebody said. If you took that same information, that the DNA, if you could translate into English, you could put everything about every living species since the beginning of time in a teaspoon and have enough left over to fill every book, to put the information from every book that's ever been written in history in that same teaspoon. It's DNA. And yet that just happened. That came out of an explosion of gases. You think of the human body, the heart that beats 100,000 times a minute, and you think of the ear with 24,000 strings and 20,000 keys. A grand piano has 240 strings and 88 keys. But the ear, 24,000 strings, 20,000 keys. The brain, 100 billion neurons. 10 terabytes of information. How long has it been since you've dealt with terabytes? Daniel, put on the screen the terabyte. That's, if you could put that information in a floppy disk, that's how many disks you would have, that number. And I would have been glad to have given you that number. I just don't know what to do with it. I don't know how to say it, where to start. So I just say, there it is. Look at it for a while. And then the eye. And I wish I had time to talk about any of these for a long time, because when you deal with the heart or the brain or the ear, it's just amazing. And the eye itself, 1 billion impulses every second. The eye can handle 500,000 messages simultaneously. Wow. A tiny retina, but it has 130 million cells and millions of nerve endings, 8 million variations of color. Automatic focusing system that's the envy of every camera designer in the world, because man can't come close. Instant adjustment to darkness. Automatically your eyes adjust to darkness and become 100 times more powerful. When you look at the human eye and everything about it, it maintains itself. It's your body's even made to produce liquid. The eye produces liquid to keep the eye from drying out. Even your eyelids grow to a point and stop and never grow beyond that. It's not true in your head. Well, some of you have a different problem, but if you've got hair, it just keeps on growing. But everything about the eye shows design, complexity, order, intelligence. Here's what Charles Darwin, and this may be the only thing that I've ever read that I like about Darwin. To suppose, some of you act like you like Charles Darwin. What are you doing? Charles Darwin tried to murder God. Something called evolution. And it bothers me greatly that evolution is taught as a fact when it's not even a real good theory. Here's what Charles Darwin said about the eye. To suppose that the eye could have been formed by natural selection seems, I freely confess, absurd in the highest degree. Even Charles Darwin acknowledges that there's something so special about the eye that you have to acknowledge it. I wish we had time to talk about the galaxies and the planets. And you know, this Earth is just a medium-sized planet orbiting an average star we call the Sun. And even the Milky Way is one of a million known galaxies. Just one of a million. And this blew my mind. We know of galaxies out there that are more than 13 million light years away. And recently, the Hubble telescope, they discovered some objects out there, six massive objects that are 14 billion light years away. Speed of light, you get to the moon in 1.3 seconds, you get to the sun in 8.3 seconds. And we got stuff out there in the universe that was created that's 14 billion light years away. So why is the universe like it is? Why is it elegant? Why does it have dependable laws? Why is it so structured? Why is it so interrelated? Random gases exploding? I think chance is not a good option. I think it's a creator designer. And when we make any changes in our universe, if we raise or lower the universe's expansion by even one part of a million, then we rule out life. If the ratio of carbon to oxygen changes, then we can't breathe the air. You change the tilt of the Earth's axis one way and we freeze. You change it the other way and we burn up. If we were any closer to the sun or any further from the sun, we couldn't make it. If we rotated at a different speed than we're rotating, we wouldn't make it. So we live in a universe that was perfectly designed. You know what that tells me? Somebody has gone to a lot of trouble to make the universe. To make it just right so that you and I can exist on it. So that we can live. And modern science didn't intend to, but I believe modern science points to the fact that you matter to God. God wanted to make a special place for you. And he did. Isaac Newton said, this most beautiful system of the sun, planets, and comets could only proceed from the counsel and dominions of an intelligent and powerful being. William Paley, the philosopher, said, there simply cannot be design without a designer. There cannot be order without deliberate choice. I tell you, it takes a lot less faith to believe God did it than to believe it happened by chance, by explosion, or that came out of slime or nothingness, or that it always existed. Cosmological, teleological, and then the argument from religious belief. And just let me quickly give you this. In every culture, every tribe, every place on the earth, why is it that there is always a hunger for God. And they're trying to worship God in some way. Genesis 1:26, God said, "Let us make man in our own image." That answers why there's so much religious interest in the hearts and minds of men. We're made in the image of God. God created us for himself. It was Blaise Pascal who said, in everyone there's a God-shaped hole, a God-shaped vacuum. Augustine said, we are restless until we rest in thee, talking about God. And then the fourth argument is the moral argument. Where does the world get its sense of justice and injustice? In almost every culture, in every place of the earth, loyalty is preferred over betrayal, kindness over meanness, fidelity over infidelity. You know, in some places you may can marry two women or three women. There's no place in the world where you can marry as many women as you want to. Love over hate, truth over lying, right over wrong. If there is no God, then there's no such thing as right or wrong. It's the survival of the fittest. But what we know is that there is a moral code that's within the heart of man. Now, we don't always live up to that moral code, but it's there, and we know it's there. I believe God in our DNA put something within us that we know what's right and what's wrong. See, we can't ever plead ignorance. When we mess up, we pretty well know what we did and that it was wrong. God put that in us. And the only way you can get away from that is to do what Romans 1:25 says. They exchanged the truth of God for a lie and worshiped and served created things rather than the Creator. So God says, I'm taking responsibility for revealing myself to you. God not only says, you'll see my signature everywhere in the world, but also I'm going to tap on your heart. I'm going to let you know that I'm real, that I exist. But there are those who exchange the truth of God for a lie, and they close their mind and heart, and they say, God doesn't exist. But it gets worse. Some of these people, in the name of science and education, tell people that God doesn't exist. It goes a step further. Some even go as far as to say, if you believe that God exists, you're uneducated or you're weak. They are exchanging the truth of God for a lie. Let me tell you, you know why some people don't believe in God? It's because human depravity knows no bounds. People don't believe in God because they're covering something in their life that they don't want to face God with. You see, you may have legitimate questions, and that's why we're here. This is a good place to get your questions answered. And we respect you for having a question about God. But there are some who are dishonest in that they say they don't believe in God, but what they're doing is they are protecting things they're engaged in and lifestyles they're living. And the only way they can handle that is to keep saying, there is no God, there is no God, there is no God. But I got some news for you. There is a God. He is there. He is powerful. He is good. He is ruler of the world. He is also the judge before whom one day we'll stand. And then the final argument is from religious experience. The testimony of people everywhere. How can you explain that hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people all over the world profess their faith in Jesus Christ? One of the first things after Iraq was liberated, you saw Christians getting together in Iraq. You saw Christian baptism in Iraq. Go anywhere in the world and you'll always find people who claim to have had a religious experience, a personal relationship with God. There are people all over this building this morning that would gladly take a lie detector test
and say, I've met God personally. I know He's real because He's real in my life and He's changed my life. I can tell you that there have been kings, presidents, and we have one now who's not ashamed that he has a personal relationship with God and begins each day with God. Economist. In every walk of life, you'll find people who say, yes, God exists because he's real in my life. And experience is never at the mercy of argument. There's a guy that was a law student at Yale, and his name is Lee Strobel. Written a great book. I told you about it last week, The Case for Christ, The Case for Faith. And if you hadn't read those books, it'd be good to get them in the bookstore. This guy was an atheist, did not believe God existed. And his wife got saved. And his wife started talking to him. But he didn't want to hear about it. But she kept talking to him, and she kept trying to get him to come to church, and he wouldn't come to church. And she finally said to him, I think you might like the music. The music is not dead music, it's alive, it's exciting, and come and listen to the music. Now, this guy's a journalist, and he was so, he didn't want to go, but he came, but he took his notebook with him because he wanted, if anybody saw them there, to tell them he was doing a story for the Chicago Tribune, and that's why he was there. And he came and he sat there, and for the next year and 9 months, he looked at Christianity from every perspective, the historical, the philosophical, the theological. And at the end of that search, he gave his heart and life to Jesus Christ. And here's what I love about Lee Strobel's story. A few days later, his daughter said to her mama, Mama, what happened to my daddy? What changed my daddy? She said, Jesus did. She said, then I want Jesus to change me. God does exist.